At the rate of the current illegal poaching, the Kenyan elephant could be extinct within the next 10 years. Welcome to Del Marva Today. This is Don Rush. At least 183 elephants have been killed in the East African nation this year, leaving around 30,000. That's according to the anti-poaching campaign, Hands Off Our Elephants. And the illegal ivory trade, especially with countries like China and Thailand, has more than doubled since 2007, and it is the most serious threat since the commercial ban was imposed in 1989. Jim Justice Nyamo, a native Kenyan, has been making a 560-mile walk from Boston to Washington, D.C. to protest the illegal ivory trade, the poaching of elephants in Africa. It's part of the Ivory Belongs to Elephants walk. And after a stop over here at the campus of Salisbury University, he'll begin his walk to Washington, D.C. this morning from Red Square. And welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Well, let me ask you this. I just read that sort of startling estimate that you could see the extinction of the Kenyan elephant, at least the wild elephant, within the next 10 years. Is that a realistic possibility?
This is a realistic. And, you know, it's taking us back to 1979 when Kenya, we had 167,000. It took us only 10 years. In 1989, Kenya, we were left only with 16,000 elephants. That was over 300% that were killed. So with the rate at which now we have in Kenya, we're losing 3 elephants per day, and with a population of less than 30,000 now, actually the current status is 25,600. If the status remains the way it is, in the next few ten years or less than that, there will be no elephants remaining in Kenya. And this is the same thing again in Africa.
And why is it? I mean, I noted a moment ago that we've had this pickup in trade and illegal ivory, especially out of Thailand and China. Why is there this upsurge, do you think, we've seen?
One, the poaching in Africa, you know, started around 2009-10 there. That's where there was, the high peak of that. And we have seen a lot of changes that has happened, you know, unemployment, like in some of the countries like Rwanda, where they closed down the mining industry. And then there has been also a rumor about the China bargaining power, and also you have the influx of the Chinese in most of the African countries. And then 80% of the most of the animals, they live outside the protected areas. That means they leave the communities. You find that like in Kenya, 80% of the elephants are outside. That means the government, through the authority, which is the Kenya Wildlife Service, can only be able to manage the 20%. Now, with all what we see every day, China, and we've seen the seasons, there is a rumor that 1 kg of ivory is this much, through the media, print media. And it gives community now who are struggling to live and to earn their living to think about they can explore maybe a way of surviving by killing elephants.
So am I understanding that part of the problem has, at least in the past, been some, particularly in Kenya, but obviously other places, it's just simply corruption. I saw one report, I guess, in the 1970s, I think, the wife of Jomo Kenyatta and some other high-level government officials were at least alleged to be involved in illegal smuggling. How serious is the corruption issue in terms of trying to clamp down on this?
We see corruption at the, where we see the ivory getting out of the country. But when it comes to killing the elephants, there is no corruption. Because the people who are killing elephants are basically young people who don't even know whether China exists, America exists, or European exists. They are trying to earn their living. Corruption will only come in at the national level, trying to implement the bill or improving the wildlife, penalties. But the heart of all these things is communities who live just, barely $50. Like during my time that I've been marching in Kenya, over 2,000 miles, I have been able to encounter those people, the young people who kill elephants. They are young at the age of 30 years. And talking to them with old people, the elders, they would tell us that they only do this because there are people who come to buy and they would ask them for $70, $50 to kill. There is no corruption. corruption now comes in. Like, we have proposed a good wildlife bill that accommodates the community's incentives, accommodate the, you know, the mitigating human elephant conflict. That bill has been in the parliament for over 6 years. There are people who do not want to pass that.
But
they don't want to pass the bill.
Why don't they want to?
The reason is because the bill was talking about that we have these private ranchers, and mostly are foreigners, and mostly are rich men who just keep animals in their own land. They don't want to pass this because they benefit from, you know, in Africa, but most of the countries, hunting is illegal. But in Kenya particularly, hunting is illegal completely. But people would want to continue doing this. So they want to not to pass this bill so that they can continue getting this business out.
When you talk to some of these young folks, as you say, who go out and they kill these animals, and you explain to them what might be the future, that is, that we may be looking at the elephant's extinction, what is the reaction? I mean, how do they do you change any minds, or how do they react to it?
One, looking at my experience, I'm a conservation biologist, studied elephants for 16 years in Kenya and part of the Africa. I know most of the areas, how many elephants we had for the couple of years. Like one area, which is in central Kenya, where we have the, you know, most of the poaching is happening in the northern Kenya. I would talk to communities and I would tell them, those young men, 10 years ago, we had 10,000 elephants here. We now have 2,000 elephants. You know, they would be like, what? They will now see the reality, the seriousness of this. And then I would also sit down and tell them, do you know elephants? You know, when you kill this elephant and you leave the baby elephant, you know, you are leaving this baby in the bad hands. What I have learned, our young people have no information. Like, I'm working with the two ex-poachers who surrendered themselves when I was working. And it is through that understanding and seeing that this business that they're doing, it's basically ruining their own life. It's basically affecting. Like the old men would tell them, we have lived with these animals for many years. And if they had values, you guys would have not fought these animals. Basically, what those people need is awareness, education, and see them, connect them with the wildlife, whether it is direct or indirect. And I'm using this, like now we have the influx of the scooters or the motorcycles in Kenya now. And I would connect and I would tell them that getting these motorcycles, it is through the tourism that we have. Talking of Kenya, receive 12% of our GDP comes from tourism. What we don't have is from the government level to disseminate the information, connect the communities with the tourism, so that communities begin now owning up the resources that they have.
How satisfied are you that the top of the government, the president and so on, in the country is truly behind this or is taking enough steps? I mean, how much responsibility is there? I saw a quote by Margaret Kenyatta, who, and I'll just read the quote, says, unless this crisis is averted in 10 years, there will be no wild elephants left in Kenya. How can we stand by while one of the world's most amazing species is driven to extinction? How serious is that?
The current president, Kenyatta, is, you know, he's still in this age of young people. So he understands the dynamics and he understands the problem. During his inauguration, which was March this year, he said that poachers have no place in this country. And he actually keep on repeating, and I'm borrowing this word, that Kenya is the light of Africa. Most of the African countries, they actually look at what Kenya is doing. Last year, Kenya was able to bring the 28 countries that we have, that 7 countries in Africa which have elephants, but 28 now have agreed to come together, and Kenya is a secretariat trying to manage the elephants together, not as an individual country. Kenyatta, because he is very busy trying to, you know, to put country into good places, and now this is a new government where we have new systems. His wife comes in now, and I remember when she first joined me in the campaign, we were able to change a couple of things that were pending in the parliament. And one of them was to increase the penalty from 1 year jail or improve the cash bill of 40,000 shillings, which is about $400, to 15 years jail, and improve the 40,000 to now $50,000 or 3 million Kenya shillings. That's one step. And the other thing that has come on board is through the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport and the seaport, there is now an improvement on the policing and surveillance. And that's why there is a lot of CSIS arrested every day, because people now are becoming sensitive that this thing is so serious. Yeah.
Let me ask you a step back. How did you personally become involved in this? I mean, where did you grow up, and how did you become so passionate deciding this is one of these, for part of your life anyway, is going to be a big passion of your life now?
Apparently, my second name means animal, Nyamu. And I learned more about this when I was finishing my high school, what it means and why. And although I was already in the conservation, it started way back when I was finishing my elementary level. And my uncle brought me a magazine which was written by kids in Kenya. We have a National Wildlife Club. So he brought me a magazine which comes three copies in a year. And after reading that, I was so interested by seeing young people talking about, animals. And I remember the magazine was talking about the aftermath of 1989 poaching. The high school I was joining, there was no club. So I requested my history teacher to join me and establish the club. And by the that term, we had 40 students who were members. The club kept on growing, and the second term I was picked by the Canadian government to join the Canadian student who came. Unfortunately, I missed to go to Canada because I was young. It went like that, and by the time I was finishing the high school, I got a full scholarship to study wildlife management in Tanzania. So I was still pushed to the conservation. And 1990, that's when I got my first job with Kenya Wildlife Service as a research assistant on elephant program, which I worked up to 2004. And I participated in counting elephants in about 20 countries in Africa. It was until 2004 when I resigned from KWS, and I was requested by international organization African Conservation Center to head the program along Kenya-Tanzania border, looking at the effect of elephant outside the protected areas, which I worked up to 2011, when I had one successful program working with the communities and using a community-based conservation model, which I'm now borrowing. I realized that I'm making good impact, but it is insignificant because it's only one area. So I decided to let me resign and do something different, not just one area, but the whole country. So I'm borrowing that model, because the conservation in Kenya is changing from the landscape model, where you find animals in the park, to community-based conservation model, where animals are now moving out of the park to the communities. So I now find myself, and I realize that my grandfather, the reason why he was called Nyamo, which is a coincidence, I learned his original name was called Kamau. But because he had a big chunk of land, animals used to come on his land, which I even find them even today on my grandfather's farm. So people would say, oh, that is Kamau of animal, and that's how he obtained that name. But that's just by a coincidence. So when I left the conservation, because I learned that we as conservationists, we only sit in the boardroom, we discuss issues of conservation, we write very good conservation journals, but we forget about communities who are very important stakeholders, number two, to manage, because 80% of the wildlife really is outside the community. And community every day, they don't see any value. But it is now we go back now and begin teaching them how to live with these animals, because they will not go back to the park. They will live with them.
When you see one of these animals, I mean, you obviously been up close. What is it? What do they mean to you? I mean, what do you see? I mean, because they're extraordinary animals with tremendous memory capabilities that we now know of. I mean, what's your feeling about them when you see them, someone at large?
My feeling is with studying elephant for that long is that elephant they live in social bond, like families. The female lives together. And led by the oldest female, which we call the matriarch. And male, more or less, lives together. And during the time they feel that there is insecurity, they come together. I still regard elephant as a keystone species. That's what I normally say. And they are also flagship species that require more conservation dynamics and require a lot of effort. You know, I'm using elephant and people have been asking me, why don't you rally support for anything else like cheetah or lion? We have problems in lion now, hyenas now. But I'm saying, if we conserve elephants, like the place where I was working, 2004 to 2009, where community established a community conservancy. Initially, we targeted elephants, but the elephant brought in all the other animals. That's why I call them a keystone species. They are able to, when they move with the whole, you know, the whole animal kingdom. So if we conserve elephants, we've conserved all other species they are in. You know, I like the memory of the elephant. And actually, even the other animals, they move through the elephant. If you look at this photo, which is this one, it's the baby that is in the middle. They protect animals. They protect the young babies. And the same case, even when they are moving, like when they are with the communities, they share the resources with the communities, water, pasture, and they even come closer to the communities because of there is the symbiotic relationship between elephants and people. For instance, the communities that lives with that are just adjacent to the national parks, they are pastoralists. They keep livestock, they keep all, you know, cows and sheep and goat. And so what they do, because they don't do farming, they burn that dung or that manure together. When they burn, that become ash, that become iodine, and that become salt for the elephants and other animals. If we eliminate elephants, we are talking of killing, you know, like changing the universe. So we got to protect the elephants because they are part of us. Like so one community in Kenya, they talk of a female elephant was once time someone's wife. So they talk of, there is connectivity. And also there is also a lot of history that we learn about, you know, the elephant. There are some diseases that people even go collecting the elephant dung and they would use that thing. So there is a lot of networking. But more importantly, I feel bad when I see how elephants mourn. I've studied it now, the ecology now. They have very nice memory. Female elephants are like women. The thing that women go through, female elephant goes through that. They're like human being. It's only that they have four legs. They have very nice memory. I have seen a whole group of female, when their matriarch was killed, the group became disorganized. Yeah? So it's they've actually separated the human being. When you eliminate the female, you're talking of the other group, and one group could be of 90, 70 elephants. So just kill one, you disorganize the whole group. And they also show solidarity and community. You know, I learned here in America, people don't live communally. They live individually. Elephant shows how solidarity and how communal we should be and sharing and communicate. They communicate through vocal communication. One lead the group, and then they'd be able to move that.
Now, what, by the way, just sort of on a personal level, what was it like when you were growing up? Did you grow up in a village, or what's your family like back in Kenya?
Yeah, I grew up in where we live in the village. Mm-hmm. Is about 3 miles to the forest, which is one of the national park called Aberdare National Park. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to see elephants because my dad was working in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. That's where we used to go. And I also went for my studies there. I used to hear, you know, by then there were poachers. And I used to hear guns in the forest. And we were so scared. Hyenas used to come out from the forest to us. I grew up, one, fearing going to the forest because there were poachers. You know, the poachers of 79 to 89. So, but animals used to come. Elephants used to come to our farm. They used to come and cooperate. And we could go in the morning and see where they were last night. And my mom used to say, to tell us, let them share. Let us share what we have. They don't have their mothers. And I remember another time I was walking and I was telling people, an elephant walk for 200 kilometers. I don't know how many miles. 200 kilometers in search of water. How many kilometers, miles, should we walk to ensure that they are okay? by providing them with a good health. So I still remember the echo of my mom, and she walked with me in Nairobi recently when I did 20 kilometers, and she used to remind me, do you remember what I used to tell you? They don't have their mother, so you're going to be their mother now.
Now, you, in addition to this walk here, you also, I think it was a 1,500-mile walk, I think it was in Africa, is that right?
I've done 2,000 miles.
Oh, 2,000 miles.
Yeah.
From where to where was that?
The first walk I did from the Mombasa, which is the Kenyan coast, to the capital. And the other one I started from, that was February 14th to 23rd this year. The other one I did from Masai Mara, the famous Masai Mara, all the way to the northern Kenya, which was May 11, that took me 50 days up to 29th of June. The other one I did in Nairobi, which was the Nairobi edition, which was a warm-up of these 560 miles to the state, which I did it in August 10th. Yeah.
So what was that experience like, walking all those miles, and particularly the people that you met?
Oh, you know, like the first walk that I did in Nairobi was, the first one from Mombasa to Nairobi was full of stress. But it was an educational walk. I learned so many things. I passed through one of the biggest national parks in Kenya, which in 1979 used to host 50,000 elephants. Today it's only host 11,000, is the highest. And I was paying courtesy call to the district commissioner, and I remember he told me, young man, why do you waste your time by walking and there are so many elephants here? I remember by then I had so very painful blisters by that time. I was wearing some open shoes. And he even told me, you know, you take care of yourself because you might not even reach Nairobi with this kind of blisters. And so I asked him, sir, what do you think, how many elephants do you think we have here? He told me we have 1 million elephants here, and they're just, you know, giving community hell. You know, I was shocked because he's a government officer who should have information. We have only 11,600 in that park. So I kept on now wondering, if these are the people who are supposed to be disseminating the information to the community and have no information, how much more should I spend and educate these people? And I changed the tactics a bit when I did the second walk. I ensured that I'll not pass any district commissioner or county. I visited 21 counties, and in Kenya we have 47 counties. And I kept on educating them. And I could even ask them, how many elephants do you think we have in this region? They didn't even have information. Secondly, even the Kenya Wildlife Service, even the field officers who were there, they didn't even have the information. Even asking them, what do you think would be the implication of poaching? If we were to lose all these elephants, what do you think we should, what are the implications? Had no information. And I would bring to them, and particularly the hoteliers, that all these hotels that we have is because of the wildlife. If we don't have these animals, we'll be the first people by closing down. So the experience kept on growing. It's like, you know what I have learned here in the U.S. now when I came. And I actually put a note and said, I didn't know this is how it was. The people that I have been able to talk to, old and young people, had no connection with what is happening in Africa. Yes, they hear there is poaching. But when it comes, people would say, but we don't have elephants in Africa. Why walk here and there are no elephants here? About 65% of our tourists comes from America every day. And the Africa, we have nothing else to show. We only have elephants, which is the keystone species, the hyena and all these animals. And you guys have a very nice landscape. But you only come to see animals in Africa. So if there will be no animals to see in Africa, then we have nothing. The other thing that I'm saying is, unfortunately, in Africa, we need infrastructure. But the only people who seem to be interested in doing this is China. Every country in Africa, I think there must be Chinese. They come build very nice highways, dump their vehicles there, and then they take away our animals. One of the community that I talked about, that they were very nice, they had an investor who was an American, and the Bill Gates came and spent night there. We need investors in Africa. If we want to be visiting Africa, have many old many Americans who visited Kenya before. I met one in Holland. We need, you know, it's one of the continents that we have. that has all the resources that you can see at a crossroads. We might focus through the elephant. We have now less than 2,000 cheetah in Africa. In Kenya.
Kenya, right.
In Kenya. So if we finish the cheetah, we have now in Kenya, we have less than 1,000 rhinos remaining now. Just see what is happening in Zimbabwe and South Africa. And those countries, they have refused to join the 28 coalition of African Elephant Coalition team. That we need to speak as one voice in Africa.
So you get resistance in Africa itself and from other various nations. Then.
South Africa don't feel like the Africans.
Now, I know that the White House apparently has announced that it's going to destroy, has destroyed its stockpile of the seized ivory.
Yeah.
And are you encouraged by the leadership that the White House has taken, at least recently, because this is a recent phenomenon? And what do you expect from the United States?
Yeah, that thing did it when it was they announced that, I was so encouraged. And it reminded me of 1988 when George Bush by then announced that he was the first one to announce the international ban on ivory, which Kenya followed suit and banned all the ivory that we had. It is the history reminded me, and history repeats itself. We are now going back to 1988 now. What Americans have done is what other countries should do. I was very encouraged to see that. America was the second leading consumer of ivory from China, the leading. So I should expect the other countries to do the same. This is one step that they have done this. I read it today about the Hillary Clinton committing the $80 million for the anti-poaching in Africa. We want to see more of people. But this is because the solution now is to ensure that there is the ban is still there, but maybe make it more, implement and execute that.
Now, I understand that one of the elements in this is that there's a lot of money that's being made by various terrorist groups, at least as I was reading. The Al-Shabaab, which was taking responsibility for the recent mall shooting and takeover in Nairobi, that some estimates say that they could supply – the money they get from this trafficking could supply something up to 40% of the amount of money they need to stay in operation. In other words, it seems to be – some dynamic encouragement for them to go ahead and indeed participate in this illegal trade of elephants. How significant is that in terms of trying to control this trade? Because, I mean, obviously they're not affiliated with any particular government. Apparently they don't have any axe to grind when it comes to poaching. How serious is that?
Yeah, there are two ways here. There is the economic aspect. And there is now the way they are trying to recruit young people who are doing nothing to become criminals. We witnessed 2 years ago where Kenya was the first one to try and, you know, try to clear the Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Those people, when they were pushed from Somalia, they came in Kenya. And the nearest place they went was the Kenyan coast, which hosts about 20,000 elephants through the national parks. We witnessed one day 11 elephants were killed in one day, a whole family. There is a big connection between the Al-Shabaab. I'll not talk about the Al-Qaeda, which is not in Africa, but it is now, it's coming, although it's one thing at the same time. And so many people who have been arrested trying to, you know, to pass the ivory from the airport, the seaport, are those criminals. What is happening in the northern Kenya where I passed and I talked to those young people, they are one community there would want, they have guns, so they want to exchange ivory with the guns. So young men who have nothing, they are doing, they are told, can you kill the elephant? They are even given I remember one person told me, we are even given guns in advance. You kill the elephant and bring the ivory here. So, and looking at what they're doing, what you just reiterated, it's one group. They do, when they're not doing poaching, they are doing cattle rustling, stealing cattle from other, using the guns, and they're also using the road bedded.
We've been speaking with Jim Justice Nyamu. He is a native of Kenya, and he has been making a 560-mile walk from Boston to Washington, D.C. to protest the illegal ivory trade and the poaching of elephants. It's part of the Ivory Belongs to Elephants Walk. And after his stop over here, he'll be marching out to from Red Square to make the end of his mark in Washington, D.C. And we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
Delmarva Today is a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Don Rush is the host. Chris Rank is the executive producer and audio engineer. You can listen to this program again on our website, delmarvapublicradio.net. You can also view our program on PAC-14 television and on demand. Visit PAC14.org for full details and schedules.